You have reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Please rep tell me your question after the tone.
Hi, Flora. This is Christy. I've just been curious about chameleons and other color-changing creatures. Exactly how detailed can their color change be? What triggers their color change? Super, super curious.
Hello?
Hey, Christy. It's Flora from ELT.
Oh my goodness, I'm smiling so big right now.
What got you thinking about chameleons? Is this like a 420 pleasure trip to Petco kind of scenario?
Not quite. My daughter, when she was 2.5, we got a little book about a very sad chameleon, actually. He was sad that everyone else had their own color, but he just kept changing colors based on what he was landing on. He was striped like the tiger's tail, or was like red with white polka dots like a mushroom top. And I started getting curious about the actual scientific legitimacy of this book.
Do you often fact check your daughter's children's books?
You know, I was a physics teacher, so I do actually think about the science of them often. And it was a book that we used while potty training. So we read that book a lot.
All right, what do you want to know about these amazing Technicolor dreamboats?
I would love to know, how in the world do chameleons do what they do? And what actually are they doing?
Are the books and movies that you're exposing your daughter to a big fucking lie?
Exactly.
We have just the expert, and I am going to go out on a small, spindly limb and say that he loves chameleons as much as your kid.
Yes.
It's a love-love relationship, and any chance that I have to talk about chameleons, that's my pleasure.
I want to introduce you to Russell Ligon, biologist and chameleon daddy.
Chameleon daddy. That's appropriate, yeah.
It's appropriate because Russell would give an arm and a leg for his study subjects.
One of the ways I funded my research at ASU was I sold my body.
Go on.
Yeah. I participated in this diabetes study, and they fed me like the sugary drink. And then they took these deep muscle tissue biopsies. So they went way deep in my quadricep and pulled out like a chunk of muscle.
You sold your body parts to pay for your chameleon research.
Yep.
That's insane.
That is deep and that is intense.
So thanks to his internal revenue, Russell was able to fund his transformative chameleon research. He kept 40 chameleons in his lab. Picture the reptile house at the zoo, but wall-to-wall chameleons.
Oh, wow.
They've each got their own individual high-rise with, you know, plants and food cups and things like that.
Chameleons are territorial, so each one is kept separately with its own little privacy curtain.
Yes. They're very cantankerous, and so you have to keep them visually isolated from each other. Otherwise, they get angry and stressed out.
That's exactly how I feel about my neighbors. And I wish my landlord would do something about it. Okay, we're going to get to blending in a second. But first, I want to give you some chameleon background that stands out.
Okay.
They are thin branch arboreal specialists.
They're like into twigs.
They're really into twigs, yeah. They can make use of branches that are thinner than their bodies. And so there are plenty of lizards that can climb trees and big branches. Their legs are kind of scattered out to the side and they scramble about. Chameleons, their legs go below them, so they can basically walk on a tightrope.
Their unusual anatomy lets them clutch teeny tiny twigs with all four limbs.
I didn't realize that their legs were tucked under them in that way.
Yeah. They also have these little Muppet paws to help them grip.
100%. I love their little Muppet hands.
And they have Muppet eyes to match. They have these gigantic googly eyes that rotate independently.
Which gives them a kind of confused look a lot of the time.
But not all the time. When they're hunting, they lock those googly eyes on their prey and bring out the tongue torpedo.
They have this projectile tongue that can shoot out of their mouth with incredible speed.
So cool.
And catch prey up to a body length or more away from their head. And that's all separate from the best part, which is their ability to change colors.
I love that he just blew our minds with so many facts and we're not even at the point of why we called him.
Yeah, let's get to the color change. Russell studied the color-changing abilities of one particular species, veiled chameleons.
They are gorgeous, and they do a lot of color change.
What's their kind of like default color?
That's such a good question. They have these beautiful yellow vertical stripes that run kind of the length of their body. They have spots inside those stripes. In between the stripes can be kind of a grayish green all the way to a beautiful turquoise.
This is their rest state? Mm-hmm. Is this like show-off-y complex detail? That's really neat.
Yeah, and they can change up those colorful details. But here's the thing. When it comes to camouflage,
they cannot change color, unfortunately, in the way that they're commonly depicted in children's books.
They can't flip a switch and blend into any background, but they do gradually shift their shade in response to how bright the light is or whether they're hot or cold.
So chameleons will darken first thing in the morning to suck up as much of that solar energy as possible to warm their bodies so they can start their day.
And this tint shifting is happening automatically. There's no decision making.
The skin cells themselves have the ability to respond to the light that they're receiving. So if you actually just hold up your finger or a stencil and block some of the light that's coming on them, and you hold it there for a minute or two and then remove it, you can actually put a temporary tattoo on your chameleon.
Stop. Oh my goodness. Temporary tattooed chameleons.
So lighter or darker, that's kind of the extent of their camouflaging color correction. They're not going to blend in with a pink and white toadstool.
Mm-hmm.
But veiled chameleons do vary their veneer in a much more dramatic way for a completely different reason.
I can't wait.
To navigate personal, high-stakes chameleon drama.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Let's start with veiled chameleons.
Is that a pun?
That's a pun.
So female chameleons are beautiful color changers themselves.
Female veiled chameleons can completely change their outfit of the day to signal to suitors.
And so a female who is open to mating with a male will have and show different colors and patterns versus one who doesn't want to mate with that particular individual.
What are her swipe right colors?
So she's kind of like this spearmint green, this light, beautiful green with kind of turquoise, orange dots. And her no thank you, her swipe left color is that her body gets really, really black. And then she has these beautiful robin's egg blue dots and little yellow circles.
Beautiful, but keep your weird little paws off of me.
Keep your adorable yet weird little chameleon paws to yourself.
I love how they're like, I'm going to look beautiful saying no to you. I'm going to look so good and you can't have me.
Okay, so while chameleons use color to navigate love, chameleons use color to wage war. In a territory fight, male veiled chameleons change color to work out who stays and who's got to go. Picture two males clutching neighboring twigs. Lock giant googly eyes, and then the chameleon color combat commences.
When a chameleon wants to, like, ramp up for a fight, they tend to get more colorful, which is often brighter. They'll go from their kind of baseline background colors to more vibrant yellows.
They're slowly putting on a yellow jacket. And as it's happening, they're watching each other closely because they can tell by each other's colors how this fight is likely to shake out.
These colors are a better predictor of who's going to win a fight, even more so than overall body mass, body size. So in veiled chameleons, chameleons that have brighter yellow stripes and get brighter more quickly are more dominant.
Veiled chameleons seem to recognize a stain that will bring the pain, a chroma that will put them in a coma, a shade that says, you'll be filleted,
oh, gosh.
A palette mallet, a cry dye, an F-U hue. Better fighters are brighter. And Russell says this makes sense because brightness correlates with health.
This is like a fashionista fight.
Yes. That's the perfect way to put it.
Oh, my word.
And if one chameleon sees that he's not going to win, he can also change color to say, hey, I'm out. I'm waving the white flag. Except for chameleons, the surrender flag is not white.
He will turn brown. So he will not only go back to his base color, he will go all the way back down to the other end of the kind of color spectrum. And he will get really dark, try to look as unthreatening.
He's like, I'm waving my brown flag.
100%.
And I'm walking away.
100%. And in some cases, that's enough. They don't have to escalate every fight to fisticuffs.
By turning color, chameleons can end the color war without any casualties.
Wow.
Which saves them energy and possibly their life. I mean, this is really the story that should be written in children's books. You know, that chameleons change color to avoid a gruesome fight to the death. And that they use color to say yay or nay to sexual forays. I expect you'll tell your preschool-aged daughter this right away.
Oh my goodness. It is an entirely different tale than I was expecting, for sure.
I mean, if we were writing a book about camouflage, the main character shouldn't be a chameleon at all. If we want to find the true queens of color, we need to get out of the jungle and head to the sea.
They're the top of the heap, the top of the pyramid. You got to give it up to them.
It's just like, it's not even a contest. Not even close.
Oh my goodness. Two scientists. I can't even right now.
We could not let you go without telling you about the best shade shifters in the animal kingdom.
Oh, hooray.
That's after the break. Okay, so welcome back to this Cephalopodcast. Grab your scuba mask, your fins, your oxygen tank, your wetsuit, your flashlight, your energy bar in a Ziploc baggie, your laminated emergency contact, your backup energy bar, and your underwater whistle, because we are about to dive in and meet the queens of camouflage, the true doyens of disguise. And let me introduce you to our guide.
I love color-changing animals. I've kind of dedicated my life to being everyone's favorite cephalopod cheerleader.
This is biologist Sarah McAnulty, and like Russell, she is unusually devoted to her study subjects.
So I've got the squidmobile. The squidmobile is a RAV4 that has squid all over it. And yeah, it just says squidmobile on one side and then honk if you love squid on the other side, and has a bunch of little hand-drawn squid all over it.
Do people honk when you're out in the world?
Absolutely. It always takes a minute to figure out, like, are they honking because they're upset or are they honking because of squid?
This is her personal ride?
Yeah.
Or a work vehicle?
This is her personal car.
You know what? I respect that amount of dedication.
So Sarah says that the best color changers in the animal kingdom are cephalopods, squid, octopus, and cuttlefish. If we were doing a 1 to 10 on the camability scale, they'd be...
11. 11 out of 10, for sure.
Yeah. And within that group, Sarah says there is one that takes the camo cake.
My personal favorites are the cuttlefish.
Are you familiar with them?
Yeah, I actually, I lived in Korea for a couple years, and that's like an after-dinner snack. Like popcorn, you would do dried cuttlefish instead.
You're familiar with them as a snack.
As a munchie.
As a munchie. Okay, so if you were to calamari them up in your head, how do you envision them when they're not on the menu?
Kind of like a mix of a jellyfish and a octopus with maybe like a ruffle bottom.
Yes, they definitely have a ruffle bottom.
I describe them as like a little rugby ball with a bed skirt around it. Like they're the shorter, fatter version of squid. They're cute. Their eyes are very expressive. Their eyes have W-shaped pupils.
Oh, wow.
And their camouflage abilities are off the charts. Cuttles can change their coat of many colors in the blink of a third eye. It is fast and furious.
They can change color, like, literally as quickly as they can think about it.
Okay, I'm sending you a video, and we'll put it on Instagram at ELT Show.
That was unexpected. Oh, my goodness. Oh, it looked just like a coral.
Yeah, basically you're watching an undersea scene and all you see is this coral and a little fish swimming in front of it. And then suddenly the coral transforms into a bundle of white tentacles that shoot out and snap up the fish.
I feel like it's like one of those stuffed animals that you like flip inside out and it's one thing and you flip right side out and it's the other.
I've just watched it like 30 times.
Yes. And each time I like forget exactly where its parameters are.
So cuttlefish can swatch switch like no other. And this is how they do it. They are insane in the membrane.
Cuttlefish have layers of color-changing ability in their skin. The top layer has chromatophores. Those chromatophores can be red, brown, yellow, pink, and almost black as well.
They're little pockets of pigment in the skin, and each pigment pocket is surrounded by muscles.
And when the muscles contract, it takes this tiny, tiny little pinprick of pigment, and it stretches it out to a big flat pancake.
It looks like when you put a droplet of food coloring in water and it just spreads.
Oh, wow.
But chromatophores just give them their base layer. Then they have other foreskins they can pull out when needed, like the iridophores, which give them their glow.
And that is what makes some cuttlefish look almost sparkly.
Sparkly. That's exciting.
Yeah, like they look shimmery and iridescent. That's why they're called iridophores.
Cuttlefish harness these technicolored supersonic skin sacs to do all kinds of things, attract mates, hunt, and also to make themselves almost impossible to see.
When they're out camouflaging, which is what they're doing most of the time because they're not trying to get eaten most of the time, they kind of look at their environment and then decide between three main patterns.
One is called uniform,
which, as it implies, is just like one big color.
So if a cuttlefish is swimming around a sandy bottom, it can turn light tan to match. But if there's a little more variation in the background, the cuttlefish may put on a different pattern.
Mottled, which is kind of speckly, might be used for like a sandy environment that has chunks of rocks or whatever in it.
Now let's say the cuttlefish is in a super high contrast environment. Maybe there's dark sand and like big white seashells. In this case, the cuttlefish may go with look number three, the disruptive pattern.
Disruptive is big blocks of white and dark. And that helps the animal blend in when there's like big chunky stuff in the environment and they want to break up their body line.
Disruptive coloration breaks up their cuddly silhouette so a predator can't tell where that delicious rugby ball starts and ends.
Wow. This makes me sad that I've munched them.
Well, there's more. Cuttlefish have another trick up their skungili, and it doesn't have to do with color at all. They can also contort themselves to match their medium. Like, their tentacles are usually smooth, but if they need to,
they can make them kind of like ribbony and curly.
Like fronds of seaweed.
Yes, and that was in that video where it was like kind of curly to match the coral around it.
Yeah, and it's very detailed. Like, if the seaweed is at a 45-degree angle, cuttlefish can angle their tentacles the same amount.
No.
And it goes even further. If a cuttlefish needs to blend into something bumpy, it's got a trick for that too.
It has little like structures in its what looks like its butt called papillae, which are kind of like extreme goosebumps. And they use that to just look more bumpy and like algae, for example.
I feel like cuttlefish are absolutely never talked about, and they are the true champions of this camouflage world.
Right? Yeah. I can definitely confirm that they are awesome at camouflage.
Oh, so cool. It's really what I was hoping for as an answer all along. It was just the wrong creature.
So next time your daughter requests some restroom reading, we've got something for you to try.
All right, hold on. Let me open it up real quick. Oh, my word. Look at this book. The Little Red Cuttlefish. Someone actually wrote a book about the cuttlefish. I think if you handed this to me before our talk, I'd be a little bit skeptical. But now I feel like cuttlefish really have something to say in this world. Thank you.
If you have a question you can't get to the bottom of, call us. 833-RING-ELT. 833-RING-ELT.
This episode was produced by Caitlin O'Keefe, Carla Javier, Adley Robinson, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Doug Barron. Our editors are Jorge Just and Caitlin Kenny. Our fact checker is Nicole Pasulka. Music by Emma Munger, Bobby Lord, and Dara Hirsch. Mixed by Dara Hirsch. Every Little Thing is a Gimlet production and a Spotify original podcast. Honk if you love squid. Goodbye.
Hey, ELT, this is Caroline. I just listened to the Fanta Sneeze episode, and oh my god, I thought I was the only one who sneezed when they had a naughty thought. So now I know I'm not alone. Thanks. Bye.